Our ship didn't have any gunnery on it at all until we got to Pearl Harbor. I was in four battles, and I never had a chance to shoot my gun until I actually was in actual war. So that was an experience for me. We didn't have the pom-pom guns the carriers had. They were self-loading, so we had to have a loader. Anyway, we were at the station's full quarters. He says, you want to go down the gallery and get a cup of coffee? And I said, no, why don't you go down? I said, I'll hold the fort here. So anyway, he said, no, you go down and get the coffee. He said, anyway, when I come back, my loader was dead. He got hit. And to this day, I still get tears in my eyes over it. It was hard to accept when you're that close to somebody, end up in a situation that he was.
Welcome back to the Lead Me Lifecast. This is the third and final episode of this three-part series with my grandfather, Edmund Hammett. I hope you've enjoyed listening to these stories that are so dear to my heart. I want to open this episode by just simply saying thank you to all the men and women, including my grandfather and my father, who served the United States military. Thank you for all the sacrifices you and your families have made. If you missed the first two episodes of this three-part series, man, I would highly encourage you to go back and listen. You can find all the episodes of the Lead Me Lifecast at matthammettmusic.com, at iTunes, or on SoundCloud. And for live appearances, check the events page at matthammettmusic.com. Next week, we're going to get back to our regular format, but I hope you enjoy this final episode with my grandfather, Edmund Hammett, on the Lead Me Lifecast.
There was only two LSTs in the whole Pacific that had six davits, and that was the 555, and we were the 556. That helped us a lot with these suicide divers. In the Battle of the Philippines and the Lady, actually, I got a book and it tells a story about it. It was actually considered a suicide mission, which at that time aboard ship we didn't know. Anyway, there was only four LSTs and the rest were LSTs. There was about four or five DDs, destroyers. I recall it was about a total of 59 ships. Most of them were tank and troop ships. We went around the Straits of Mindanao into the backside of Leyte, which was Ormac. We didn't run into any conflict or trouble at all going. We unloaded all our troops and tanks and what we had on board on Ormac. So we had to go back down the Straits of Mindanao. We had to go through a mini Japanese submarine station. That's when you read the story and see the films that they got in documentaries about the Japanese coming down on the Philippines, separating their fleet in three sections. The one was supposed to hit the Philippines direct, and the one was a diversion. Most of our ships and our Navy took off. They left the Leyte without any defense. Then the one section was coming through the straits that we were coming through, and of course they spotted us with their aircraft. So all the ships got hit except ours, still through this area where the mini subs were, and it was a good clear day and no real clouds in the sky. Anyway, the skipper come out, and he wasn't a Christian, got on the bridge and he said, now hear this, we better pray. He says, the only chance we have to get through the mini sub base. I don't remember nobody praying, but anyhow, it got pitch black, and I had never seen so much rain in my life. It come down in sheets, and that brought us through the Mindanao Straits, and all these ships had to report back to what they call White Beach. To my knowledge, we were the only ship that ended up on White Beach. Our skipper was so angry over this whole situation that he put the ship up on dry land, and I happened to be a helmsman that time, steering the ship. The helmsman took care of the enunciator, which rang up the engine room to tell you what the speed was, and they report to the bridge. Skipper was saying, what's your speed? I said, we're full right now, sir. I said, full speed ahead. He said, don't tell the engine room. He says, going to hit the beach at full speed. So the, anyway, a guy that throws out a wet line, he tells you how many distance you're away from the beach. He start running down the deck and said, what's the matter with the skipper? He's out of his mind. He says, we only got 200 feet from the beach. And we were at full speed. Anyway, we went up on that beach and, oh my God, we had palm trees and we had coconuts all over the deck. These guys come bailing out of the engine room. They thought we got hit with a torpedo. You know, they didn't know we were hitting dry land. And then anyway, he tore out our bilges. So we had to go in dry dock for 3 months. And that's when I asked the skipper, I says, can I go over to the air base and stay on the air base for 3 months while I repair our ship? He says, yeah, you can go over there. So,
what did you do there? Did you have a job there?
Yeah, I hate to say what I did. I painted nudes on a Quonset hut. They found out I was an artist, so they had me painting all these nudes on the Quonset hut. And of course, I got to have all the booze I wanted and all the food I wanted. That was before I got saved.
Did you tell him about him painting a nude on the bow of the ship?
Yeah, he just told me that.
One of the conflicts we were in, or battle, whatever you want to call it, we couldn't figure why we were getting all the aircraft. And of course, they had the kamikazes or suicides. Luckily enough, our ship wasn't big enough, really, for most of these suicides. Most of them would miss us. We'd have parts of airplanes on our deck. The Japanese aircraft were close enough to us that you could actually see the scarf that they're wearing, or you can actually see the teeth in their mouth. That's how close these aircraft were to us when these suicide divers. One little story I gotta tell, we were anchored and tied up. Oh God, they must have been 60, 70, or maybe 270 ships. The Japanese used to send a biplane around at night. And we called it the Japanese roof. And what they would do, go around a convoy that was all anchored at night, is to keep us awake so we wouldn't sleep. They would cut their engines off, and you could hear them going by, just the air going by the wing struts. And you could hear them going shh. And then finally they'd have to open the throttle and clear out their engine so they wouldn't die. And when they cleared their engine out, of course you'd see the exhaust flames. So we had a guy on one of my guns who was a single 40 millimeter, and his name was Bullet. He says, put a clip in now. I said, Bullet, don't get any ideas. Old Bullet, he was training, he was listening for that biplane going by. And then when they throttle out to clear his engines out, the flame would come out of the exhaust. He pulled the trigger. He just shot one shell up. Every fourth shell out of the clip was a tracer. Anyway, he hit this biplane. He shot it down. You ought to hear all these guys in this whole convoy. You know, oh my goodness. There were so many guys cheering and yelling. Anyway, Bullard, the poor guy, he got put in a brig for, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 months. And of course, you know, at night, you're not supposed to light up a cigarette or anything, or put a light on. That was the reason they gave Bullet the big time. We were in quite a few of the conflicts. Palau, we were in Leyte, we were in Manila. We were in that battle, and then Okinawa. When I got back from my ship duty, they asked me where I wanted to go, and that's when I said, I want to go to Toledo. So anyway, they shipped me to Toledo, and I got off at the old station. I mean, it was an eyesore in Toledo. Everybody couldn't wait till they dismantled the thing. I asked the conductor, I said, is this Toledo? It sure is. I thought, you know, this is Toledo tomorrow, you know. Sure looked very inviting to me. So anyway, they finally, the Navy bus come down, picked me up, and drove me throw me through Summer Street to all the bars and the hustlers. And I asked the bus driver, I said, my God, is this Toledo? I said, the ugliest city I have seen. So when I finally got to the Naval Army, I asked the yeoman, I said, I want to transfer. He says, my goodness, you just got here. I says, do you have any naval air stations close by? He says, yeah, you got one up in Michigan. He says, I said, well, give me a transfer up in Michigan. So in the meantime, at the Naval Army, the next night, I had Liberty that night. And so I went on Liberty, and that was a night I met Betty.
This friend of mine met him and his friend first.
Okay.
And I was babysitting for a lady that was in the hospital. And that was in the Weiler homes. Mary says, I want you to meet this guy. She says, it's just your type. And I said, I don't want to meet him. I had somebody else. I was thinking about somebody else. I had one that was overseas. I went steady with him.
Okay, I see.
That's how that happened. And he was on Liberty. And my girlfriend was walking through the Weiler homes.
Yeah, here.
I don't know whether you want that.
While you're talking, we'll do a little turn this towards
you. You don't
want
to hear that.
That's okay. Just let me turn it towards you so we can pick you up a little better. There you go. Go ahead. Tell your part there.
She happened to be walking through, and Eddie asked her if she knew, and she told him where I was babysitting. And right away I knew he was the one. He was so good to me. He was so good. Anyhow, that's how we met. He used to buy me all kinds of stuff, you know. Bought me a record player. And
you still need a screen there?
Every time I mentioned something I like, he'd buy it for me.
Oh, really?
In other words, he spoiled me. There, that's the end of that. You didn't put that on, did you?
Well, yeah, I did. Of course I did.
So anyway, when I went back to the Naval Army, I asked a yeoman, I said, hey, I says, cancel out that transfer that I put in for that air base up in Michigan. He says, I'm sorry, but too late. He says, it already went through. Well, he said, the only thing I could do is I could give you a week traveling time to get up Michigan. So so anyway, I got assigned to that Naval Air Station up in Michigan. Gee whiz, I says, I'm gonna have to buy me a car that my mother left in inheritance. I had no idea how much was a total. By the time the Aid Society and all the attorneys and got their hands into it and the court costs, it would have been quite a decent sum in that day. So even $1,400 was worth a lot of money back in 41. I went in on this lot to buy a car. I bought this 41 Chevy. Yeah, I think it was a stick shift, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it was a manual transmission, yeah. So I asked him, I said, how do you drive this thing? The colored guy laughed at me. He said, you mean to tell me you don't know how to drive a car and you bought a car? I said, yeah, what's these pedals for? I says, there's three pedals down there. He says, well, one's a clutch and one's a brake and one's an accelerator. And anyway, he explained to me I put it in reverse and backed up and I hit the car behind me. And the dealer came out and says, well, now you owe me for two cars. I says, well, there's no way I could pay you for two cars. He said, well, I'll get you. He used a pretty strange, well, because I use a pretty vulgar language to get my rear end off, get out of there. It was snow and partially ice on the road. And the only way to Toledo at that time was the old Route 25. There was no expressways. So Before I drove down to Betty, guy says to me, he says, "Willie, you're going to have to get a driver's license." I said, "Well, where do you get one of those?" He says, "You got to go to the police station." I went to the police station. And I said, "Wanted a driver's license." So they gave me a temporary license. I never even took a test. Didn't take a manual test or anything. So anyway, I drove this 41 Chevy. It was a coupe, two-door. I drove this all the way down to Toledo. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning when I finally got to Betty's house, rang the doorbell. Her mother opened the door, and they probably thought, "What in the world's going on here at this hour in the morning?" So anyway, she let me sleep on the Davenport. Wasn't in the Navy much longer. I went to Chicago to get my discharge. I mean, that was the beginning of our life with Betty and I. Finally, Betty and I ended up in Williston. We built our first house. I built 4 houses. It was a buddy-buddy type deal. You help me and I'll help you. Yeah. So we went to that Lutheran church, St. John's in Williston, for 25 years. Betty had a girlfriend she met. Anyway, she said, "Betty, you and Eddie, why don't you come to this church?" She said, you really like it. Anyway, it was the Church of the Open Bible. It was halfway in the ground. And anyway, I went to that church, and I was about as mad as I could be when I got back in the car. I said to Betty, "I said, don't you ever get me back in that church again." I said, "I am never going back." I just couldn't get used to it. You know, everybody raising their hands, everybody praising the Lord and shouting hallelujah. Being a Lutheran boy, I was way out of my category. I didn't understand it. I happened to go back to the Open Bible. I don't know why. But Betty must have convinced me to go back.
I was the one that was searching.
One of the service, I said the sinner's prayer and gave myself to the Lord. I was 49 years old before I accepted the Lord. Anyway, that was my experience with the Holy Spirit and accepting Jesus Christ into my life. Best thing I ever did. It's just been wonderful.
Grandpa, what would be your advice to young people, especially young couples?
My advice to young couples would be find a good church that preaches the gospel and preaches God's word and get born again. Being born again, a lot of people that are not familiar with the term, they kind of look at you twice like you're out of your tree. If you want a wonderful marriage life, both you and your husband become one. That'd be my advice to a young couple.
Grandpa, in light of everything you shared with me today, out of all your experiences in life, what would you hope that people would most remember you for?
I hope they remember me and my Christian walk and what I did for Jesus Christ when I was born again. One thing I'm really pleased with is, and I thank God tremendously for, is all the grandkids and grandchildren and the family, they all accepted the Lord. It's a Christian family. And the Bible tells us that you and your household will be saved. Boy, the Lord sure answered that prayer. Each night when I go to bed, I pray and thank the good Lord.
He was a young man trying to find where he belonged, running from realities that were hard to embrace, coming to find that the future wasn't everything he had hoped for, but better. This has been the story of a ragamuffin soul, of Edmund Hammett, finding his way home from war.